The Stick a Fork in It podcast is a presentation of Feeding Tampa Bay.
Welcome, 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 folks, back to Stick a Fork in It. We are at the table with all of our friends, as usual. Welcome back. Good to see you guys again.
Has it been a while? I don't remember the last podcast we did.
I know. It's funny because
it aired 2 weeks ago.
People think that we get together every 2 weeks, but we don't.
Yes.
We record in advance, so
bulk.
It might have been a little while.
Yes. Yeah. So it's good to be with you all.
Yeah. Yeah, likewise.
Love it.
So as we often do, I usually like to think about a topic, right, that we could discuss as we kind of welcome each other in. And so here's what I want to ask the two of you. Who is the most cheerful person you know?
Taryn DeClue.
I had
Taryn?
Seriously. Yeah. I wrote it down.
Like, no.
Yeah.
And you guys listening or viewing,
no fluff,
we need to have her on.
Yeah.
Because so they can meet a Taryn.
She is always positive.
Seen her not positive. Even when she's like angry, she's positive.
Yes. Figuring out a solution.
Do you think this is a mindset or some sort of sham?
That's a good
Do you think she's secretly
sham,
not happy?
Yeah. No, I think it's who she is. Yeah. I get little notes on my desk. She put a sticker on my cup.
Yeah.
I don't get any of that.
Oh,
well,
that's
very telling. Because Evan and I, like, that was first in line.
Yeah, all the time.
No doubt.
Really?
I'm so glad I wrote it down.
Yeah, that's so funny.
It's right Taryn there with a little smiley face and a heart on my paper.
Yeah.
All right,
I'm going to give it to her.
Are you a positive person, a neutral person? Or a negative person? What's your outlook? How would you describe yourself? Positive?
I think I'm reactively positive. Like, I think my first thoughts are sometimes negative. I'm like, that's not good. What's the silver lining?
Ev.
I know. But it's like the end result is still positivity.
Right.
But it's like.
It's a journey.
But you got to talk yourself into
I got to be like, no, this is a good thing.
So your natural resting state is, like my natural resting state has a degree of suspicion.
Yeah, that's
I'm
fair.
I'm definitely a realist.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's where I was going to head, yeah, was like kind of realism. It's like middle of the road a little bit, you know.
But I actually think that's the place, you know, I always wonder the people that are that positive, are they really that intelligent? Sorry, I don't want Taryn. Please let
Taryn, if you're listening.
If you ever listen to this. I did not want to attack your intelligence because it's significant.
Yes, right. It is.
But
yes,
do you think they're positive because they just don't know what else is happening around
them? I think it could be both. I think some people are positive because like they have like a simple kind of approach to the world. I think some people are like just naturally very positive.
You positive, know? Neutral.
Situation.
Mm.
I try to start out positive. Sometimes I'm a realist because maybe things are going on because I'm not that all the time.
Are you pessimistic about anything?
No.
You don't ever see anything
once,
where you go,
every once in a while, you know.
Is there a particular area, genre, or thing that you're pessimistic about?
Sometimes things happening in the world. It kind of gets to me, especially with what we do in ours.
For sure. Yeah.
You know, worrying about things, you know, hoping something, having faith it's going to change and then
yeah, we talked
runs
about
flat.
This, the difference, the concept of the difference between hope and faith.
Yeah.
Right?
That was a powerful letter you put out.
Yeah,
to
who
us.
Wrote that?
You did.
Okay.
I'm giving you love. You got to take a breath and let me give it. It was very, that was really impactful to me. I've used that a number of times with people to help them understand something.
Yeah, it's hard because we are in a business that asks us to put aside what may be a feeling of shoveling sand against the tide.
Mm. Yeah.
Right? That every day we come in and the problem doesn't necessarily seem to be appreciably smaller. Or you enter into someone's story, and we've had reporters ask us this question. We often talk in disasters. We see the absolute worst in human lives that happen. We also see the incredible generosity of spirit in those same moments. In our world, we always are in between both,
right?
That we stand in there. And I think that's why probably, although I would always rather prepare for trouble.
prepare for the worst, hope for the best, expect something in between.
Yeah,
you
I just
guys,
always
–
I would rather not
something.
I would rather not get in the head – hitting the side of the head with a shovel if I could avoid
True.
It.
True.
Right?
That's what we have you for. So you do that and I'll be optimistic over here and terribly
and he can
let
be situationally.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I'll
he
keep
can
an
be
eye
like, I'm like, come on, Ev, lift it up, baby.
So speaking of positive people, and I don't, we have to be very careful now about the intelligence.
Right.
I mean.
at the bar.
Now this is going to get awkward. Now
right
that we're going to introduce our guest, this could get a little awkward. But my favorite food banker in the whole world of food banking, who is the most positive person I know, is joining us today.
Yeah, I know. Julie Yurko.
Welcome, Julie.
Hello.
President and CEO of Northern Illinois Food Bank. Mm-hmm.
What are you doing in Florida?
Coming to learn from Thomas.
Oh.
Well, actually, JC.
Yeah. The truth comes out.
Known.
I see.
It's good to see you here always.
So
yeah,
good to be here.
Welcome,
it's amazing.
Welcome.
This is an amazing place that
Isn't
you all
it?
Have built.
Yeah.
Have you always been cheery and positive?
I believe so. Oh. Yes. Okay. Yes, absolutely. Why wouldn't you be?
Right.
So are you always optimistic? Like how to, you know, because for me, it's situational. I start out optimistic, strong.
Yeah.
Like I'm like, it's going to, that's not going to happen because this is. And then, whew, in our world, rabbit holes sometimes.
Yeah. No, I would say always optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
When I look at my strength finder or my working genius, the least favorite activity for me is discernment because I don't want
so
to think
ignorance
about the
is
negative.
Bliss.
Ignorance
yeah.
is bliss. I
so
don't
actually,
want to think about the negative. I don't want. I would be a terrible lawyer like, trying to protect you. I'd be terrible. And the funny story was when I was in college, and I was dating someone, and
name please.
We will call him Thomas. And
ooh, that's some news right out there. Anyway,
or Thomas's much younger brother.
Ooh, good one.
So I'm dating this guy, and he learns that I have a 4.0, which is impressive, right?
Yes, good job, hard
work.
We won't
talk about my degree in cello, but I had a 4.0.
Oh, that's okay, go ahead.
So I have a 4.0, and very young Thomas looks at me and says, you have a 4.0, but you're always smiling.
Wow.
I totally understand the question.
Yeah, I would kind of be too.
Yeah, like, I do think people, I say I live in a world of kitty cats and rainbows, and I think people assume that comes with ignorance at best or stupidity at worst.
Wow.
And they're wrong.
Love that.
They're truly wrong because Thomas does hold you in a very high regard, and that's not a place where he puts everyone. So we know that's for sure. So we want to get to know you better, but you've been on the podcast before.
Nope.
Yes, you have. Oh, yes, ma'am.
What?
Run, Thomas, run.
I was on the podcast
before.
Yes, I was.
Yes.
In the hot seat.
Right,
yes.
Exactly. It's
different. And folks are going to be watching the video right now. We filmed on my street, and we did a whole promo for Thomas, kicking off, doing what? What were you guys up to?
He was running the marathon to benefit my food bank in Chicago.
Yes.
Along with his daughter, Jessica.
Yes.
Yeah,
Jessica
we did.
Joined.
Yeah.
Yes.
2 years ago, October
honor.
Of 23.
Yep. We had such a good time promoting that and getting it out there. It was really so much fun, but filming it was like an experience.
It's in the video, it looks like he's running down the street once. We probably had you run that street like eight times so we could get all the shots.
God almighty.
Yeah. And then our videographer, who is incredibly talented, it was the first time we ever saw him on his single wheel skateboard.
Yeah.
So going by, catching
did
him running.
Did you ever see the video?
Yeah, but she didn't get outtakes.
Yeah, no, there's behind the scenes that you wouldn't know.
I saw a beautiful, inspiring video.
Right?
Yes. Down the street, yes.
Yeah, lap number 25. He was kind of like, can you guys please wrap this up?
In the rain, too.
It was
quite a day.
But it was for good.
So welcome back.
Yeah. See? Should we be offended she didn't remember?
Am I the only person who's ever been on twice?
No.
But this is your time. It was more talking about, you know, you guys working together and the run and run, Thomas, run.
Run, Thomas, run.
Right.
But so that's why we'd like to get to know you better. First of all, you're in town to see JC.
I am.
But, you know, I've heard a lot about you around here. I was very fortunate to meet you in that brief period of time. But you are a very celebrated executive in our network.
Oh, you're very kind.
You've been a nonprofit for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But you're also a really busy mom.
I am.
Right? And unique education. We want to eventually go there. And then you have family close by.
Like, I do.
So tell us a little about, start wherever you'd like to, but tell us about those dynamics and how they all work for you, which is probably starts with optimism, but that's a lot.
It does. I guess I will start, if we're starting with optimism, I will share that my parents, Dan and Judy, they live one.
Oh, sure, you're telling us their names.
She did. It was Thomas.
They will be very proud to be on your podcast. young Thomas from school, from mighty Northern Illinois University, may not appreciate the call out. but my parents lived 1.7 miles from me, and they moved there after I moved into my home. They wanted to be close to me and my family, which has been a huge blessing.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
My dad is very gregarious. Mm-hmm. My dad is very loud. He laughs a lot. He loves everybody. My mom is much more, I'm going to call her elegant. Mm. My mom's a very elegant person. Mm-hmm. We were raised with, we must maintain propriety. Mm. She was an English teacher. She always used big words.
There you go.
That's why you use propriety.
And gregarious.
Right? Wow.
Yeah. And so, but having Dan and Judy as parents, all my memories are of them serving. Mm. Dad is a lawyer. Mom is a teacher. They were always involved in church. They were always running the youth group. There was always someone who needed a little extra help that would come on vacation with us, might live with us for a while. They were always, you know, I'm one of three daughters, but then we have two other now women, you know, who are daughters, right? Like, they were just very, very generous, very faith-filled, very, very loving.
You and mean two other daughters that they kind of quasi-adopted into the family that they took care of? Yeah, okay.
Yes, yes. Dad walking him down the aisle kind of stuff.
Wow.
And so they being raised in that kind of environment, like I won the parent lottery.
No.
Did you meet their parents? Did you know their parents?
I did. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And?
Yes. My grandmother worked for the YWCA in Chicago. This was, you know, back in the 1940s.
Wow.
I had another grandma who I was going to actually talk about later, but my other grandma was a stay-at-home mom with my dad, but very involved in the church, a wonderful musician. Mm. I mean, it was all part of the family. It was all part of the family. So I have wonderful parents. They're still involved. They come over for dinner every Tuesday night.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. 83 and 84. And that's our thing.
Yeah.
We watch the Bears games together. Like, we're just.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
It's so sad. It's so hard to be any kind of Chicago sports fan.
Oh, no.
At this present time.
At this present time.
There's always waves.
Yeah.
How did that influence your upbringing, influence your family?
Yes.
Because you have a very unique family, too.
Yes. Yeah. So I have four children. Two are children by biology and two are children that we adopted. Both are adopted from the United States, from the Chicagoland area, but both are African American.
Okay.
And that actually came out of a conversation in college with my husband, where we both found it unbelievable and unacceptable that there were children in the United States that didn't have homes.
Yes.
And that was language I have today that I didn't have then, that it was disproportionately impacting our children of color. We thought it was ridiculous. Right. Why in America could this be?
Right.
And so we were blessed to have, you know, what I call the biologicals. Mm. Cal and Dan, and then we adopted Branford and Claire and brought them home. There are no people in the world who I've learned more from than my children.
Mm. Right.
Two of my children have special needs. They're not necessarily the children that I adopted, which I like to make a point of. I think people like to jump to conclusions. Yeah. But I have learned so much being a parent to people who our world chooses to marginalize.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Our world likes to say, you're not enough. You don't fit in this box, which we think is going to limit you, right? Or we're going to create systems that are going to limit you.
Mm-hmm.
And that has influenced me so greatly because I believe we are all created with a perfect purpose. it may not meet the definitions that we all think that should be, right. but we all have gifts, we all have talents, we all have challenges. As humans, our job is to celebrate, to be optimistic and celebrate
yes.
the gifts and talents, and is to come up with a strategy for the challenge, mm-hmm. period.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. And so when I was brought into this work, mm-hmm. and this work is about serving those whom are often judged, who are marginalized, mm-hmm. who are told mm-hmm. they've done something wrong, right, who are told they're not enough, I'm like, oh, no. That's not how we're going to talk about this. Because we love you. We see value in you. We believe you can thrive. And your best thriving is your best thriving. No one's going to tell you what that should be.
Yeah,
we're just going to hopefully help you get there.
So tell us how your children are thriving. Because, you know, we on every podcast, we talk about our influences. You know, uh-huh. they came, how old were your children when they came into the house?
Sure.
And where yeah. are they now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So both of my children by adoption were adopted young. So Branford came home at 2 weeks. Claire was
wow.
10 weeks.
Wow.
So very young.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They know no
when
different.
When they came to the home, yep. we have That's open home. Relationships with their birth families.
I was going to ask that. Did you know their birth families?
Uh-huh. Yes. Okay. Yes. Met the birth families prior to the adoption. Mm-hmm. As is often happens with open adoptions, there's ebbs and flows. Mm-hmm. But, you know, spent Labor Day with one birth family, mm-hmm. saw the other birth family in August. Mm-hmm. You know, it's in a very positive place mm-hmm. right now, and it means everything to my children.
Yes.
And so it means everything to yeah. me. Mm-hmm. I love it. We've just been invited to a 70th birthday party for our birth grandpa.
Oh, wow.
In another state, and I'm like, oh, that's going to be fun. Let's go to that.
Yeah.
That is going to be very fun. But how are they thriving? My child, who is on the autism spectrum, actually works at the food bank.
Oh, wow.
College educated, always worked as a driver over the summers, kind of transitioning out of education into the workforce, mm-hmm. was more of a challenge, and this was a very safe community. Mm-hmm. And so he is out there serving every day. He does the hard work. Mm-hmm. We tease about that, right? He's out there, rain, sleet, mm-hmm. we're Chicago, yeah. right? It's snowing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock on a Friday night. Cal's there, and he's getting it done. And I'm so proud of him.
Yeah.
I'm so proud of him. My second son, also drove for us during the summer, also has graduated college. He now works at Shell Oil in supply chain. I'm okay. raising all of these operational.
Yes. yes.
And so Danny is down at Shell Oil doing great things. I'm really proud of him. Branford, he's 22. He works in warehousing at Amazon.
Oh, wow.
He also has done work with UPS and Goodwill. He has... He also comes and volunteers on a regular cadence at the food bank.
Mm. Wow.
So again, like I have all these food bankers in my lives. Big, loving, loving heart. And he is someone who, out of all the kids, right, like he's the one where I'm like, I understand so much more about people because I get, have the privilege of being your mom.
Mm.
He's a good, good guy. And then I call her Little Miss Claire, but Little Miss Claire is 17. So she is 4'11 and 3/4. I asked, can we stretch
really?
Her? Yeah. I said, can we stretch her 5 feet? And the doctor said, we are stretching her to 4'11 and 3/4.
Oh, man. Wow.
So she's a senior in high school, looking at colleges, going to go and be her best self, wants to be in criminal justice and a child advocate.
Oh, wow.
So how can you not be proud of those
yeah,
four
right.
beautiful
of course.
People?
How was it? I guess everybody grew up together, mm-hmm. so they don't. None of them know anything different,
Mm-mm.
right? So, but you did mention that you and your husband were intentional about saying there are children who should be wanted, cared for, and loved, and we're going to be mm-hmm. a part of that. How has that? You said specifically they have taught you much. How has that particular part of your world been informative to you, understanding how a person of color navigates the world differently mm-hmm. than maybe others of us would? How is a mom who didn't go through that journey, so often children that are in that space have parents that can help them say, this is how I navigated that difficulty. Mm-hmm. You didn't have that, but you had two children who would have to have. How have you figured out that space for you and your children? You can be empathetic to it, but you didn't, right?
Yeah, no. And learning about white privilege, which can be a loaded word, but understanding the way that someone who's not a person of color navigates the world, the things that we don't have to think about because we're white.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not that we've done anything wrong, but we, like, when you're going into spaces and you are not a white person, you do think differently because of the systemic injustices and the prejudice in our country.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's kind of like a hard stop. Like, it's just what it is. And it comes from all places. We were walking into the building where we were going to go up to the courthouse to finalize the adoption of Branford. And it was an African-American woman who took me aside and told me that I did not have my son bundled up in the right way because it was cold outside.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes from everybody. Mm-hmm. Like as a white woman holding an African-American child, I
right.
was, like, again, things I've learned how to navigate.
Mm-hmm.
I remember being in a department store, a nicer department store, with my daughter, and she wanted to go off, and we were in a community, and I said, no.
Mm.
You know, let's stay together.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't want her to have to experience someone following her.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Wow.
You know, and those are just the realities. I have had conversations with educators having a white son and a black son with special needs and sitting in the educational meeting about their services and knowing that these people have dedicated their lives to serving children with special needs were exhibiting a bias against my black son. And I literally had to look at them and say, I know that if he had blue eyes and blonde hair like my other child, you'd be treating him differently.
Mm-hmm.
Like that has informed everything for me about understanding why it is so important for us as a country to embrace diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, it's my next question. It's kind of hard to follow that. So you've been at the food bank, your children.
But I think, you know, I think the terrific part about the question is that everything else we ask from here on out sits on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you guys all work at the food bank, but that really, where did your career start? Cello?
Cello, my mighty cello degree. That's what I call it. My mighty cello degree. Nice.
Is there even such a thing?
Yes.
Clearly.
I have a bachelor's in music in cello performance.
Nice.
Do you still play a cello?
I don't. Oh. I played it. A couple of my children have played instruments, so I'll sit down and I will play with them when they're, but no one's playing right now. And so,
So where did you begin? What career wise? You know, you start with cello, and where do you go from there? You know, were you in Carnegie Hall with the cello?
No, never was going to be. No.
Do you know how to get to Carnegie Hall?
I do. My son has played Carnegie Hall. Thank you very much.
There's an old joke. Do you know how to get to Carnegie Hall?
Practice. I know that joke. So again, I have awesome parents, right?
Yeah.
And at the time, we're living in Washington, D.C., and I want to come back to Illinois. I'd moved out there during high school, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. And they let me go to a directional state college and get a cello degree. I'm like, well, that's a waste of money, but yay, Mom and Dad, for letting me do that. And I'm there, and I'm actually in an honors program coming back to...
Because you're a 4.0 in cello.
Yes. Happy.
Not sure how big of an honor that is.
Yeah, and you can smile and have one all at the same time.
But take your wins where you can get them.
All right, I'm going to leave that down. We're going to set that down. But I'm realizing I don't want to be a cellist for the rest of my life, but there was not a lot of other options. And so I'm in a program where I get to choose some different classes and do a capstone and do an internship. And so I decide I want to go into arts administration.
Okay.
And so I took a summer internship at the Chicago Youth Symphony Orchestra and decided I really loved marketing and fundraising.
Okay.
Graduated, literally got a directory of fundraising professionals in Chicago and started cold calling and started working for Brookfield Zoo in Chicago, which led me to the Children's Hospital, which led me to the Chicago Symphony Orchestra for 11 years.
Wow.
And then I brought Branny home and said, I got to stay home. I've got a couple kids that needed some extra help.
Yeah. And then 5 years later was a Great Recession. My husband lost his job. And we had done everything right. We had done everything right, which gives me such compassion for the people that we're serving. We had our six-month fund. Were we stretching dollars. I learned how to stretch dollars. Four kids, one income. It was time for me to go back to work. And so prayed, said, close to home in your work. And a friend sent me a job posting to help raise money to build a new food bank 9 miles from home. And so I applied and got the job. And that led me to the food bank.
Wow. And you've been at the same food bank?
16 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I also believe the universe conspires for good.
Yeah.
How does that work?
I believe, so whatever your faith construct might be, I believe that the universe is good.
So you know, you're choosing to use the word universe as opposed to God. Is that an intentional choice? Do you think there's a difference in your world?
For me, it's God.
Okay.
But that's because of the construct in which I was raised.
Okay.
And if you truly do, I'm a Christian, you know, you read in the Bible and there's chapters in Romans about the grafting together.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that God presents himself, the universe presents itself in a way that it's accessible to every person, wherever they are and however they choose to do it. Mm-hmm. And I believe that that is good.
Yeah.
I believe that that is good.
You start with possibility.
Mm-hmm. Or positivity.
Or positivity.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
And optimism. Yeah.
So we're going to go on to you because the food bank, let's move that question down to when she describes it.
So I am, you know, it's been interesting to hear. I've known you obviously for a while. It's interesting to hear how someone describes their journey through the world. Mm-hmm. I think that's always when you get the linear approach to some of these are the circumstances and the things that have happened. Mm-hmm. And here's how I ended up here. What strikes me about the food bank world versus where you started out first is obviously now we know that service gene was passed on and through, right? I would just ask quickly, what do your sisters do?
One's a management consultant and the other is a tax lawyer.
Interesting. So it got passed on to you. Not for a moment to suggest your sisters aren't great
folks.
They
do amazing work.
Right.
Yes.
But it's interesting how...
I'm the different one, Thomas.
Yeah. The black sheep.
She's so positive.
I know. I was like, she's the positive one.
So the charities that you started your career out with have a distance to them. You know, so then by distance, what I'm really meaning is you're in the nonprofit world, but you're not in the milieu or mix of serving, right? The direct neighborhood services. And for folks that don't know that, there's charities where you can sit behind walls or a cubicle or in an office and never understand what it's like to stand on a food line. Mm-hmm. And entering into our world, that's the case. So you arrive fresh-faced, sunny, all ready to go. I assume you had some sort of little briefcase that was well-polished, probably a bag with your
matching
lunch
shoes.
On it, a little shiny shoes and a little tag that said, "Hi, my name is Julie." And then you showed up. You showed up at the food bank. Just what the hell did you think?
When I showed up at the food bank?
Yeah.
Huh. At the time.
And you'd already begun to explore some of the things that mattered to you in this world with your children.
Yes.
Right? You had begun to plumb the depths of things, of thing. So really, that's the reference of the question, the frame of the question. Is you had started already to say, there are things that I care about in this world, and I'm going to invest myself in them. Was the food bank the place where you thought, there is a synergy between who I am and what I care about?
Oh, 100%. When I went looking for the next job, close to home was really important. Claire was one when all this was happening. But I also, having done what I would say were some of life's passions, I was like, I need this to be in service of, right? So I thought, is it something with families and children, particularly children with special needs, or is it some basic human service? And so I literally applied for one job and got one job at the time. But that's what I was looking for. And so when I showed up, I thought, this is where I'm supposed to be. And please, I feel like when I got there, I thought, this is a place that's just about ready to take off.
they were doing everything right with this little tiny pile of money in this decrepit old warehouse with a ton of passion and intention. And there were so many low-hanging fruit to pick. And I was just there for fundraising. I was just there to be a professional beggar, which is what I am. And I was like, oh, can we just, like, let's try these two things. And then, oh, let's try another two, which has definitely led to my whole leadership philosophy of, you know, 5 and 10% better every day will get you very, very far.
So you come in as a fundraiser. How would you have articulated the purpose of the food bank at that time to someone that you were seeking support from? What would you have said? This is why I want you to support us.
Our messaging, which hasn't, it started still with a person, right? It started with, we are serving people, providing access to, we called it food, pounds of food at the time. That's what the focus was. For sure. We had started some work in benefits, vulnerable populations, but it was pretty basic. And it was, I mean, my task was to go out and say, we are literally out of space. This warehouse is not big enough for not only our vision, but for the work that we are being called to do for our communities. And so will you help us build this beautiful new facility that will allow us
to do so? You were primarily capital fundraising at the time?
I was, yeah.
So you were brought in to do the capital campaign. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So you helped pay for and then ultimately a new facility was constructed, which you moved into in?
2011.
Okay. And so at some point along the way, your predecessor decided it was time for him or her to leave. Mm-hmm. And how does Julie Yurko end up in the driver's seat?
It was the cello degree.
Yeah. Obviously.
And, and the positive attitude. I got two things. I got three things going for me. The guy I dated in college, I'm not telling his name. I had a 4.0 in cello.
That was only.
And I am the most positive person you ever met. This has CEO material written all over.
Absolutely.
How did you end up in the seat?
You know, we had a wonderful CEO. I was sharing this with Thomas the other day. And he was raised in a corporate environment of you always find your successor and you develop and mentor that successor. And I will always hit Pete Schaefer. I will share his name, Pete Schaefer, formerly of McDonald's. He was our CEO. And he looked at me and said, you can do this job. And I said, what are you talking about? I have a cello degree. Mm-hmm. You've got to be crazy, right? Like, and he said, no, you can. And I'm going to give you opportunities and, you know, I'm going to help you. And I know you're going to show up. And when he chose to leave the organization, he went to the board and said, you should hire her.
So how long into your career did he identify that your relationship with him? Let me say it that way. How long did he identify that in you? Like, how long were you working with each other until that time in which he looked at you and said, hey, you have more in the tank than you may realize?
I would say we worked together for 4 years total. Mm-hmm. And I would say it was about halfway through.
Yeah. Interesting. And so your first understanding of that moment was that you rejected it outright.
I didn't believe it could be true.
Because? Unless you don't get to answer cello here.
Cello. Why didn't I think it was true? I don't think the idea
had ever
had occurred to me or occurred to anyone else.
No.
Which is kind of a sad statement. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, but you were still relatively young, age-wise, yes?
Sure.
She still is.
Right.
For the person paying attention to the podcast, you would have been in your 30s. Mm. Yeah?
40.
Really? You were in your 40s.
Yeah.
And so that's interesting. So in the world of that we exist in, but also in the corporate setting, there are positions that typically can gravitate towards leadership.
Yes, that
right?
is true.
So they're identified, one. Right? So yeah. You don't always have a CFO that moves from CFO to CEO. They're just right. very different skill yeah. sets. Yeah. And so, but you could make the case that a chief development officer, which was the equivalent of your title at that time, mm-hmm. can make that kind of transition. Yes. You were surprised by it.
I was surprised it was me. I will tell you, when I when I interviewed for the position, and credit to the board, they did a whole search for it. I said, if you are looking for an operational CEO, I'm not your person. Mm. I cannot log into the inventory system. ERP, not my jam. If you are looking for someone to create a vision, articulate that vision, and raise resources for it, I'm your person. Mm. If that's, and if I'm not, okay. That's cool. Mm-hmm.
But the other part of, you know, we've had this conversation internally Shannon just got a promotion in our organization into a different leadership role. And part of the conversation we've had with her is, okay, you've traditionally had responsibilities for what you're assigned, but you're now a leader. Mm-hmm. You have obligations to make sure that are beyond your desk, your to-do list. Right. Those things may be the driver of your behavior, but the reality is you have to step into being a leader if you really want to accept the mantle. Mm-hmm. And it's not easy. Right. So let's talk about that a little bit. It's one thing to be able to get in front of a donor and say, hey, would you give us money for the cause? You're well versed in that, and I'm sure successful. How was your leadership journey in becoming a person that can lead and get others to follow and deal with the complexities, joys, and moments, horrors of leadership?
So there was some what I would call kind of formal mentoring. Quickly got the position. Someone kindly offered to be my coach, and out of the gate, someone I had already known, and they said, I'm happy. Benefit me, benefit you. Can I be your coach? I got invited to different leadership events, you know, educational events. Started reading everything because, you know, you think, oh, sure, I'll apply for the job. And then you get the job and you're terrified. What have I done? And so there was kind of the formal education. And then there was and a lot of mentorship from my board chairs at the time, which was really meaningful to me. Mm-hmm. We were at a place where people didn't really want to be board chair for the food bank. And someone took that on and was so helpful to me. Mm. So helpful in coaching me around particularly people, right? It was the learning people and how do you develop, nurture, reward, recognize people. And so, but I would say a lot of it was just learning over the years and being curious, being committed to learning. And I listen to a lot of podcasts, I do a lot of reading, still go to a lot of
One of the things that I found, one of the things I definitely feel like is a trait amongst good leaders is maintaining a curiosity, as well as a commitment to learn. I think the other part about our work that can be really challenging, and you and I joke about this, but 80% of the people we meet outside of these doors tell us how great we are.
True.
Right? Yes. And there's a Kool-Aid there you can drink quick. Mm-hmm. And it's the, you know, you and I both know that the success that we have been an active part of a team that has achieved that success. Mm-hmm. But the great challenge of leadership is to continue to find ways to become better leaders, yes?
Absolutely.
And you've done that by largely mentoring, learning, and educating. What would you share as some of the key things you've learned along the way? And again, let me give you a framework for an answer. At my 10-year anniversary here, we have a chat that we're all on, and I wrote 10 things I learned about, you know, I've learned about myself in 10 years. Mm-hmm. And one of which is leadership is about vulnerability at depth. It is about moving into a place where you're willing to sublimate your ego, at significant, right? Because it's hard.
Yes.
Good leaders, right? I think. What are some of the truisms that you kind of guide your career by now, the things that you say, these are the places on which I stand? And I also want to note, it is especially difficult for women leaders in any industry, right? You have more to overcome, going back to white privilege versus a person of color. I have more privilege than you do because, right? What are the things that you have held on to as kind of your leadership maxims? That was a big word for your vocabulary class.
Judy will be proud.
Yeah.
Right, Judy, if you're out there.
Right? You're welcome.
She'll be very glad. Glad to hear that. What are some of my maxims? Okay, let's see. I don't know.
I think you have them. I don't. It's always hard to ask a question for which you're completely unprepared. So I don't want to do that. But I think, you know, we were talking earlier today about values and things that we kind of in our organization, have shaped for ourselves and for our organizations, you know. But I think, you know, if I were to answer the question for you, one of the things that I would say you would say is, it is very important for me as a leader to meet people where they are.
100%.
Right. So yes. I think that's a good example of things that you do that you intuitively probably do.
Yes.
Right. That ultimately end up being kind of the guideposts of early on in my career, I got rid of having a desk. Right. So I didn't have a desk for years because I just had a table where somebody could come and sit at the table. Because one of the people that mentored me said desk creates space and distance.
Yes. Yeah.
And you don't want to be the person, right? So how do you think about that question and think about the things that kind of ended up being important to you to say, this is who I am as a leader?
I would say being a nonprofit, and I will credit this to a woman whose name is Ellen Romberg at the Symphony.
We're still not going to get the name of the guy in college.
No. See, then you distract me.
You're saying Ellen.
So Ellen taught me. One of the things that Ellen taught me was how do you, within the nonprofit sector, see people, right? Nourish, see, develop people, but also, I'm going to use the word rely on the mission, because what's going to happen is things are going to get stupid. Things are going to get hard. And at the end in nonprofit world, right, you have the mission. So how do you help keep people focused on the mission? How do you connect with people? You know, it's kind of leadership 101. People want to be known. They want to be seen. Mm-hmm. It matters. Right. The management by walking around.
Mm-hmm.
How do you connect with folks? And our teams are large, but they're not that large for us to know who everybody is and be able to connect with them, ask about family, really, really important to me. I think it's important to be very clear on where you're going. People want to understand the future, what your vision is as a leader. They want to co-create that with you, but then they want you to help them keep moving towards that. And so how do you map out that vision in a way that is understandable and executable? And then how do you measure it and reward it, celebrate it when you see it? I think that's really, really important for leaders in this role because we become synonymous with the organization.
Do you think you've become a better leader than fundraiser?
Oh, interesting.
There's only one answer to that question, Troy.
I think the proper answer is yes. I do think I'm a better leader than I am fundraiser. One of the biggest privileges in my career, and it's happened a few times now, is when a donor says to me, what do you want? Tell me what you want. I want to give to what you think this organization needs. That's amazing. That is amazing. And then I go out and I say, hey, well, what do you think we need? I never believe I'm the smartest person in the world. I believe the team and the collective makes us smarter.
Right. So it's interesting. The more you speak, the more we hear your theology.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. The things that drive the leader that you are and the person that you are. You know, I think all leaders have a sense of that, you know, whether it's articulated clearly or not. It was interesting for me to go through and write that out and put it together.
Exercise.
You know, yeah, it was. You know, by nature, I enjoy writing. And so I tend to learn a lot by either what I write or what I say. Right? That tends to be, you know, for the people around me, that can be a little tiresome. But
so you have a podcast.
Red Pen Taryn.
Ev, you went to the laugh a little too quick.
Sorry.
Right. So, but it's been interesting to try and, you know, I'm a little older than you. I've been thinking a lot about, you know, my career path and things that have happened and the serendipity of moments and people that have occurred along the way. But it's interesting to sit down and think what really matters to you. What's really important to you? I walked away from the corporate world at close to 40, and it sounded like that was the most important moment in my life when you tell the story, but it wasn't. It wasn't walking away. It was walking to that mattered. At the time, you think the courage is in the walking away. It's not. The courage is in the walking to. And that was hard for me to understand. Again, you only see some of these things in hindsight. I want to move into another aspect of leadership because I think it's important. Again, we're fortunate to have, as we said earlier, one of the leaders in the food bank network, me, here on the podcast. But you're also here with us.
I happen to be here.
You were tasked with Feeding America is a very large network. It's the largest charity in the United States now. Mm-hmm. Vast network of 200 food banks serving tens of millions of friends and neighbors who are struggling. And you were asked to lead the strategic work for the entire network.
Mm-hmm. Technically, I raised my hand, just so you know.
What do you think about that? And it's hard to put a particular question to it. But how do you step into a role? So you've run a food bank, right? Mm-hmm. You've done a good job in building Northern Illinois into a powerhouse food bank in our network. But you raise your hand and you say, I would like to figure out the direction of this entire collective. Mm-hmm. A, what was that all about? Right? Because you come a long way from a dude saying to you, hey, I think you can do this. And you go, no way. To, hey, I'd like to decide the future of food banking.
Yes. Pick me.
Right, pick me. Which I think is the epitome of strength and leadership, mm-hmm. right? A
bravery,
right? What,
bravery,
right? What causes you to step into that moment? So answer that question first, and I have a follow up about what you consider success now. Mm-hmm. But talk about taking on that role.
Sure. So one of the reasons I raised my hand was the Feeding America Network had just been through a huge, what I'm going to call a kind of contract development negotiation, which is crossing T's and dotting I's, which is not my strength. I had leaned way back, and I felt that I should repay in a way that I should be engaging in a conversation at the national level because so many other folks had taken on the development of our new contract, of which I hardly paid attention. It wasn't my jam. And so one of it was I wanted to express gratitude to the network and the folks that had done that work. The other was I believe in the power of collaboration, and I believe in our 200 food banks, and we are very different, mm-hmm. right? There's a lot of diversity within it, and I felt this was an opportunity for us to say, where are we, where do we have commonalities? Where are we aligned? What can we believe in together? And that would accelerate the work that we're trying to do. I think a lot of it is pulling away what makes us different and focusing on what makes us similar. And I wanted to be a part of that process. I also care deeply about some of the things that make us similar and wanted to sneak in a few of my really important thoughts.
So like everybody, you had an ulterior motive that was wrapped up in some sort of selflessness on your part. I like the way you started with the whole selflessness, I want to serve.
Yeah.
And then you ended with, and there's some things I really want to change.
Yeah, and it's true. That's the truth.
Why did you think you were uniquely capable of doing it? It's not that others weren't.
Oh.
But why did you think you were uniquely capable of doing it?
I don't know that I was uniquely capable, but I thought I was capable. I think you could have done it? Yes.
No,
you wouldn't have leaned in. Selfish. But I think there were lots of people who could have done it. I felt like it was I had the time and the space. And like I said, I was truly wanting to lean in. And
I don't know if I agree with that statement because you used, I think, the thing that I was probably driving towards. Right. I think another thing for you to think about as a leadership quality for you is you're a tremendous uniter.
Mm-hmm. I'm a galvanizer. Right?
Mm. Yes. It, you know, joking about my personality aside, I certainly have edges. Some of them are sharp.
No.
But you're a unique uniter. Mm-hmm. Right. Because of your understanding of and belief in this sense of the collective is more important than the individual. And so while you're joking about wanting to make sure you get your points across, perhaps the greater reason that underlied all of it was and why I think you were uniquely positioned is because you have the ability to unite. Galvanize is one word, but unite is a very different one. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. People unite around someone they respect, care about. They unite around things that matter to them. And I thought it was interesting to see your willingness to step into that place.
Yeah.
But just as importantly, the respect of your peer group to say that's where you belong and will follow.
Yeah, that was very honoring to me very honoring to me that they, when I raised my hand, they said yes. And mm-hmm. they being the national office team, mm-hmm. the leadership there said yes. And that throughout the process, I did feel that people, other CEOs, other food, the food bank collective, was willing to say, okay, let's listen and let's participate. Well, that's
one of the other things I think about leadership that is really, really hard to get, mm-hmm. really, really hard to maintain is credibility. Mm-hmm. It can be gone quick.
It can be, yes.
And to get the credibility of your peers in is even more difficult than folks that work for you. They always have a sense they have to have, right? But the folks at your peer group are much harder. I want to finish with one last question. So the work that you did in helping mm-hmm. Feeding America kind of realign its strategic direction and where it wants to head, and without being wonky, what do you think is the major takeaway or victory, thing that's most important about the collective work that you did from a strategic standpoint? How do you think that changes the calculus for the network moving forward?
One is that we have agreed as a network that we are going to include Feeding Today, Feeding Tomorrow, Ending Hunger work. Up until this point, there was a bit of divide mm-hmm. in that. And we have now said, no, we are going to have strategies
right.
that talk about food and neighbor practices and mm-hmm. ending hunger strategies, and then also getting the important nod and recognition of technology in this work.
Yeah.
Of data in this work to drive strategic decisions.
You know, you just mentioned something that's really important. Another day, another conversation. Maybe we'll have you back on the podcast. We'll see what the ratings are for this one. But I think what's really important for, as we and you and I have talked about this in our visit, is that our traditional role in the community was to be sure that there was a meal on a table. Mm-hmm. But I've used this description before, and I would share it again here. When I got to Tampa, I met with the superintendent of schools in Hillsborough County, and she was recounting some of her work, and she shared, you know, I got into education because I wanted to teach children, mm-hmm. but I've spent far more of my time making sure that they get shots, have health care, are getting picked up from school, mm-hmm. are being cared yep. for thoughtfully, all of those things, right? Something she never, ever contemplated as an educator she would spend her time doing. She was not a cello major. But, you know, it's interesting what's being asked of us today is far mm-hmm. different, and what our responsibilities are continue to evolve.
Yeah.
And I think for all of us, that's a real shift in mission focus. And where
it's in the framework.
Yes.
It's not a, oh, there's 10 food banks doing that, but that's not what we do. No, now it's part of what we do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, for all of us that were a part of that effort, we applaud you and are thankful for your leadership in our network. It's been inspiring to the rest of us that have been a part of it.
Thank you.
So we asked a question on every podcast, and you can answer in any way, someone here, someone who's no longer here. But if you were to host a meal with three mm-hmm. other folks, four people around the table, who would you choose?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I thought about this. This mm-hmm. was a question I was given ahead of time, and there were so many different ways to mm-hmm. go with it. Having come from the symphony, I've sat around tables mm. with some pretty incredible people and heard some pretty incredible stories
yeah.
from folks like Mstislav Rostropovich or Yo-Yo Ma or Itzhak Perlman. Oh, wow. And so my first was like, oh, I'm going to sit down with, and it would be strong women leaders, mm-hmm. right? Okay. You can name them, you know, Melinda Gates, Oprah. But when I really thought about it, I thought about grandmas. Mm. And, you know, I had my grandma who worked at the Y, and my grandma who grew up on a farm, ran away at 18 to go to the big city, Chicago.
Wow.
And was secretary to my grandpa.
Oh.
Dreadful, right? Dreadful. you know, a great grandmother who, you know, had the kids on the farm that my grandma was delivering, literally. Like, I would want to sit down with them at the age that I'm at now and talk with them mm-hmm. about kind of who they are and what their lives were like. And did they see, right, being one of three daughters, yeah. right? Like, did you see what you were creating? Like
yes.
The blessings you were passing on to the generations to come, did you see it?
Mm-hmm.
What would you have wanted to do if times were different
right.
for you? I would feed them what I think that they would want. Grandma Boyer needs Sara Lee coffee cake. Grandma Miller needs cherry pie. We need Pepsis, probably some cigarettes. I don't smoke, but they all did. I think we would need, I'd want to bring them their foods that they would love and just sit
and
down
take them
and
back.
As a, not a granddaughter, as a woman to woman, just learn from and hear from them.
Yeah. And then get to see your success in your family.
Yeah.
And all
of
those
very
things,
proud of,
right?
Of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, we want to thank you so much. Appreciate you. I think you would. We would love for you to return in the future.
Anytime. My privilege.
Absolutely.
So I think it's always interesting to have really big thinking, broad-minded leaders on the show because it gives you a lot to walk away with. And I know every episode we kind of want to make a little goodie bag for guests when they're leaving. What are the things you should take away from today? And I know I can start for me. I think that it was the conversation about always learning and especially always learning things outside of your own experience. It's something that I think is underappreciated today, in our country, in the world. It's just we take our own experience as the default, but it's not. Everyone's experience is different, and it can be uncomfortable learning about that you're not the main character. But it's so important if you're gonna lead, especially. So I think that's a big one. What about you?
Don't be afraid to be optimistic. Don't be afraid. You can still be a powerful female leader and go straight to what the positive is going to be. And pull everything up from there. That's what I took from it. Thank you.
I think I was really struck by the idea, and it's probably something that I will think about a lot later, the willingness to enter into a relationship with children that was so completely outside of your experience. Being willing to say, this is something that's important to me. And I'm going to change the entire structure of my experience, life, and family to make sure that I can live into this value and pay attention to something that I think is critical in our community. I think that there's a lot of lip service to cause and concern, and there's a lot of talk shows and probably a lot of podcasts.
This isn't one of them.
Right? But to stand up and say, this is what I'm going to do with my life and make sure that two humans have a different experience, I think, is probably the thing that reminds me not just of the positivity, which is an outcome of the strength of spirit.
The bravery. I keep going back to the bravery, too.
Great.
Yeah.
A lot to take away, a lot to think about. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. We'd love to hear from you guys that are listening or viewing. What do you think? Send us a little note.
And we'll see you on the next episode.
So long.
The Stick a Fork in It podcast is a presentation of Feeding Tampa Bay.